Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Wendy Scott. Wendy Scott's new book, entitled Soon I Will Build an Ark, was just published by Main Street Rag Publishing Company. She completed her MFA from the University of Pittsburgh in 1999 and has taught composition and creative writing at colleges and other institutions, including a women's halfway house. Scott has also worked as a social worker and a communications writer. Her poems have appeared in Patterson Literary Review, Fourth River, Potomac Review, Cobalt Review, Voices from the Attic, Pittsburgh City Paper, and Aphelia, Journal of Women and Social Work. Hi, Wendy. How are you?
I'm good. Good, Jan. How are you?
Good. Congratulations on your book. It's a really big deal, and I'm really happy for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's very exciting.
Yeah. So you're going to read some poems from your new book?
Yes.
Okay.
Soon, I will build an ark. So this is school. No parents anywhere, and no men, not even in the bathroom stalls. I try catching words from air as the teacher speaks, but they're too hard to hold. Whichever words I clutch make me drop the rest like jacks at recess. Instead, I read the posters, red and green, blue and yellow, hanging above the blackboard. A, apple, perfectly round, even the stem looks tasty. B, ball, suspended in air, blue with green and yellow stripe. C, cat, small and black, a kitten, not like Bacardi, gnarly old tiger that hides under our beds, scratching and biting our ankles, pinning us to our mattresses. D, dog, I miss Heidi, who barked too much, lived in our backyard. I stare at you. So many letters beneath it. It isn't the girl, the rain. Maybe it's the way the drops hit her hand, held away from her body. I search the posters, chase Dick and Jane, read every road sign, pour through the newspaper. I collect words and letters like pebbles, like sticks, like ammunition. I will unlock daylight's concrete world, its walls of block. I will slip through night's probing fingers, its smothered sounds. Soon I will build an ark, draw a rocket, soar over rooftops, sew seven shirts of starwort, grow a giant peach, shrink until I live under floorboards, travel by hot air balloon, ride a star railroad, clean my volcanoes, leave. Grown from the ground. At Rosebud's bar, a vine crawls up the waitress's leg, or a dragon reaches for her thigh. In dim light, her tattoo shapeshifts as she walks. My friend sips her cappuccino, says, "In a past life, I was an Indian princess, learned that in hypnosis. The reason I can't stop thinking about Dave is he was my baby, my daughter that I wanted to keep, but they took her from me, left her on a mountain. I think that's why he hasn't called, why my feelings are so intense. I don't think I should see him again. Or maybe he just hasn't called." Two pink carnations stand in for intimacy at each table. Betas stalk the divided aquarium. A parachute hangs from the ceiling. My amaretto tea hurts my stomach. Behind us, men in black jeans dance with guitars, a double bass. In my fourth dimension, a hand caresses my knee, slides along my thigh, circles my waist. White plastic fruit hang from my ears, smaller than the golden apple heiress threw. Sky-grasping humans never win. Each is turned downward, chained to earth. Spider, stag, meteorite. I'm sick of sex with spirits, with beings floating above earth. I want a man grown from the ground, with lines I can feel in his fingers, muscles, hollows, a man with a smell. This next poem is about the girls who painted radium. When radium was first invented, it was very exciting, and they painted radium onto small watches. Radium Girl. In response to Claudia Clark's book, Painting watch faces is easy. Once you learn to thin the brush with your lips, like threading a needle, radium tastes cold, like kissing pipe. Saturday, I painted my fingernails with it, like the other girls. Let the rich folks have the watches, tiny circle on the wrist. Johnny and I sat on the porch, watched our own constellation come out with the stars. He stroked my hand, whispered, "I want to see those fireflies fly." In our room, end of the hall, second floor, I signed his body with cool and dancing sparks while Mr. Tippin snored next door. After Johnny left for the mill, I dreamed the Bessemer was a diving pool. Johnny and I swam, clean and shining. I glow all night now. When I laugh, Johnny says he can see my teeth. Mary Kate's been painting 5 years. You can see her coming, even at the new moon. Her face entire, bright and clear. You can see her bones. We call her Mary Moon, shining and pale, so pale. Such pretty, skinny hands. Tired, even more than Johnny when he's on night turn. He keeps asking, "Is it a baby?" We lost one last year. Today, I painted my lips, like being kissed by gold dust, Johnny said. I told him I was his furnace, come to swallow him. Mary Moon's been gone a week. She was my best worker, foreman said. What's with you Irish in your teeth? Bring me a healthy girl. Johnny's little sister, 16 and smart. I'm taking her tomorrow. After Zoo Tour, 1992. U2 concert following release of the Octone Baby CD. After the concert, my husband wanted home. I wanted the night river. We walked. The Ohio shimmered, silver on black silk, moon, street lamps, even stars. We sat, even the cobblestones shone. I wanted his hands on me, in mine, everywhere, his tongue, to smell like him the next morning. He started talking. I never know what you're going to do. If I ask for salt, you might ignore me. You might pass it. You might scream, throw the salt shaker at me. You're no different than Hitler. He never asked for salt. We used pepper. The salt shaker was in the kitchen, unless we had guests. I never threw it. I threw a salad bowl past his head once. It hit the wall, broke. Mostly, I screamed, sometimes for hours, stopped, screamed again. He broke stuff, too. Wedding presents, porcelain angel, brass bell. The year I stopped yelling, I stopped talking. That night, there were no bells, maybe no angels. I never told him. Some language I can't get over. Hear your pain through. Stop trying to pull me back into the ring. I stared past him at the shining river and never said, "Shut up. We can analyze me later. Look at the river. Hold my hand."
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Wendy Scott. She's reading from her new book, Soon I Will Build an Ark, published by Main Street Rag. Wendy, I was reading some of the blurbs on your book, and I like what Ed Ochester said about, you know, it being a book that's emotionally moving, and also Patricia Smith saying, talking about the unflinching narrative and sense of story in your poems. And that's one thing I love about the work, is that the emotion is in. I mean, we read so much poetry now, we can't find the emotion. And so I want to ask you about the writing of the book, as in, do you look at it as a choice to put the emotion in, to risk a lot in your work?
I think it's interesting that you say that, because I often try deliberately to see, for me, that whatever the event or the narrative or the image is, the emotion is sort of intrinsically attached to it for me. And so I think as I write, that comes through. And sometimes actually I worry that if I do too much of the emotional work in the poem, that there won't be anything left for the reader. So I often try to really pull back so that the emotion that is just naturally there for me is present, but at the same time, it's not kind of overwrought or overblown, because I want the reader to meet it. I want the reader to kind of match what's happening in the poem as they read it.
Right, right. I mean, that's what I meant, that, the details are rendered in such a way that they evoke emotion. And going back to what I said before, there's plenty of poetry where they have a lot of details, but there's nothing evoked. So I guess I'm saying it's working. I think it's hard to write really strong narrative work. And there are schools of thought out there that think that narrative is on its way out. Oh, I think narrative's never on its way out, but you have a lot of leaping within your narrative. Do you have any feelings about narrative that you'd like to share?
When I write a poem, I often imagine someone reading it who is not a poet or not a reader of poetry. So I spend a lot of time, I think, trying to imagine if my neighbors were reading my poems, or if people that I see on the bus or people I pass on the street, if they were reading my poems. And I do think that narrative, it is how we live. And I often write about people. I write about people I know. I write about myself. I write about situations. And it happens in narrative. So I think that's, I don't think narrative's on its way out at all. I do think that it's important to be fresh and to do things that are a little different. That might be one of the reasons that I leap. And sometimes also we'll start at the end and work back to the beginning, or, start in the middle. But I think narrative will always be around and will always be in poetry.
Okay. Can you read some more?
My mother stops feeding hummingbirds. For decades, she hung 16 hummingbird feeders, half a dozen fuchsias, from pine trees outside her window, which she watched as she worked. Spent her summer racing one by one to refill with candy red syrup she mixed, stored in gallons in her fridge, sure her birds would otherwise starve, imprinted for these feeders, her yard. Scores of sugar-drunk hummingbirds buzzed and dove when we walked, a fleet of miniature hovercraft swarming in dark clouds under her deck. Then she adopted my dead sister's dog that has gotten sick. Feedings on a schedule, sitting in a custom chair, cannot be left. No more feeders or syrup. Every hummingbird has moved on. I'm still trying. There is no. My dead sister faces me everywhere in my mother's house. Photos arranged so Kelly meets the eye from every chair. Above the couch, she swims freestyle, 6 years old. Beside Mom's computer, she rises from the water laughing. Behind it, she stands in a doorway, face shadowed, young woman in a flowered yellow sundress. In a photo from a wedding, Kelly dances, jaw slack, eyelids drooping, her last picture beside the couch at Mom's right hand. Kelly at eye level stares, smiling, jaundiced skin stretched tight across her cheeks, brow. A painting she made in some rehab hangs above her computer, now used by guests. Black circle of pines pressing on a clearing, a small girl surrounded by dark. To its right, photo of a teenage Kelly. Her profile, hair shorter, darker, falls forward, hiding her eyes. Beside it, in her angled script, me trying to figure this out. These are the rules, in memory of Sylvia. Whether you focus on fragility or its disability, describe the butterfly. Its torn wing, hesitant flutter. Mention yellow, orange, that it limped. Sunset is a good metaphor. The torn sunset of its wing, split from tip to body. Avoid gossamer. Use veil or sheer. How about shroud? It's sheer shroud. Next, describe your fragile friend. Sheer curtains at her hospital room. Sun setting through its sixth floor window. Yellow tulip beside her bed. How you gazed inside its split petals at a black stamen, all but hidden. It was night. Hospital windows have blinds. She was cranky. Last week, she ate handfuls of pills. That's what was orange, yellow. She swallowed over 70. Her one other friend brought her roses, pink, miniature, plant in a pot. An obvious suggestion, stay alive, take care of it. Tonight, she's making sure she'll get Ativan. There's a gossamer chemical. Without it, she says, I have nightmares. I dream my worst fears are coming true. Someone she wanted hasn't visited. He's so selfish. She's done this before and before. Describe the honeybee you knocked off the butterfly, the bee climbing towards its head. What does the bee mean? Ambiguity is good. Convey how a butterfly feels, crawling on your hand, oddly heavy, threads running around your finger slowly, that it didn't tickle. Describe how you felt a few seconds later, putting it down to drive to the hospital, how you left wondering whether you should have let the bee kill it. That helplessness is important, that too little, too late. I put it in a bush, thinking it would at least be safe from bees, which may not even be important for a monarch butterfly with a torn wing. Maybe quick death would be better than starvation. I told her she needed a new hobby. This one was boring. Suggested needlework, karate. She picked sumo wrestling. We joked about the advantages of marrying a sumo wrestler, the pitfalls. Later, crossing the parking lot, it occurred to me, sumo wrestling isn't taught in our town. That was her point. Suddenly, I want your leftovers. You left 6 bottles of Jägermeister in your fridge when you died. 3 empty, save for a shot. 2 full. 1 hidden by takeout containers, another in the produce bin. 1 more in your freezer, half full. What does this stuff even taste like? I asked Debbie, tilting the emerald glass, watching thick liquid inch along the slope toward the neck. Debbie's tended bar for 30 years, leans in. It's nasty, she said, like licorice cough syrup, sliding the mouth of the garbage bag under my hand.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Wendy Scott. She's reading from her new book, Soon I Will Build an Ark, published by Main Street Rag. Wendy, it seems to me there are a lot of poems in this book about survival. You have poems about addiction, eating disorders, sexual abuse, great loss. Could you talk about the courage it takes to write the poems and then to put them in the book? There are a lot of writers who won't even go there to write the poems. And especially I'm thinking of the writers out there listening who could use some courage. Could you talk about where you got that?
One thing that occurs to me is that I wasn't able to write a lot of these things earlier. Some of these poems were written fairly recently. The more distant poems that are written about people I know or imagined people that I might know were written first. But certain decisions, I think realizing that the people who are most, I guess, kind of tense and upset still about various traumas aren't going to be the ones who will read these poems. They're not going to be able to read them, and often wouldn't be able to support the writing of them. So that was like the first realization to let that go, to not think about those people as an audience. Another thing is, for me, it's interesting to talk about it as courage, because for me, the writing and the survival are intricately connected. And it's a part of being whole, I think, to detach different events or imagined events and just kind of work with them the way an artist works with clay or a painter works with paint. And it's there's a triumph in it, and there's a changing in it that, for me, is a necessary part of moving from quote-unquote surviving to really being free and living a full and happy life.
Yeah, good answer. I want to congratulate you on this book. People can't see the cover, but it's a really cool cover. Red and purple, and can you talk about the cover for a minute? It's
Actually, a friend of mine who was an undergraduate at one of the local schools, Carnegie Mellon, did this while she was an undergraduate. And I had talked with her. I'd seen some of her other work, and she produced this, a photo of a painting she'd actually sold to one of her professors. Mm-hmm. And it's very fitting because there are similarities in our lives that make it really cool that mm-hmm. the art and the poetry came together.
Yeah, that's a nice connection. Okay, could you read some more poems?
Sure. Not enough. No, I'm not working, Vicky answers. A trail of smoke meanders above her left hand. 8-inch canvas braces laced like corsets on each arm, medicinal beige. I can't clean the offices. I went to pick up a garbage bag, lift it out of the can. I fell on my knees, it hurt so bad. I ask if it's carpal. No, something tendon. I didn't catch it. Maybe hairline fractures. We sit on cement, somebody's stoop, first day of school. Our boys across the street, bus stop basketball. On our side, girls in shiny dresses, kindergartners with name tag necklaces, school bus shaped, or pencils, schoolhouses. They're glad to be back. They wanted to come out at 8. I couldn't get school clothes. Tim's between jobs, waiting for the force to call him back. I remember Matt's awe. Jeremy's dad wears a gun. I wish I could have gotten them new clothes, I say. Matt's dad bought him that shirt. We're holding our coffee with both hands close in front of us, resting on our mugs, heavy with lack. The bus comes. Boys run. Sunlight catches a hologram on one crisp shirt. She sighs. Some of them don't have new clothes, I guess. I remember when she watched my boys, must be 2 years back. She was serving dinner as we left. Ramen noodles. No protein, no vegetables. My only thought, doesn't she know that's not enough? One Friday at the women's rehab. And this one has a nod to some of your poems. I'd selected Beatty, Cafania, Daniels, urban, gritty, portrait poems. Now you write one. Autobiographical. Include your mother's and father's names. Where you were born, story from your life. Each woman read aloud, except one. Write a lie poem, I said. Change the facts, some, all, any. She asked to be excused. Be right back. But she wasn't. Someone said, that's Shelley. I know she's not supposed to leave, but she's just 18. Her father was murdered. Her mother's dead. Shelley was driving, drunk. Her mom was in the car. My breath gone, falling suddenly over a cliff. I collected my books. The pencils and holders go in the counselor's office. Through its glass, I saw Shelley crying. I went to the bathroom, washed my coffee cup, talked with one of the women. Seeing the counselor, I walked over, clutching the pencils. She hadn't cried before. Some pain I cannot imagine. On the way home, I tried. I took my dog for a walk, heated leftovers, cleaned the vents. Beneath each vent, a ragged hole where plaster was cut to fit the ductwork. There is no moral. That girl's pain is another country. My mother doesn't want grace. 37 years ago, my sister arrived early, feet first and crooked, already pointing away. Underweight, in the NICU, in a tent. Came home with colic, braces on her legs, nobody sleeping. 3 hospitalizations by the age of 2, blue lip asthma. Her lungs and air, silent combat. 38 years ago, her father left his wife because my mother was pregnant. New marriage, same beer, same violence. Mother will never forget smoking, drinking those 9 months, the only one she couldn't breastfeed. 36 years later, my sister's liver fails. After years of drinking and starving, she broke down. Mother thinks this is hitting bottom, orders total parenteral nutrition, food straight to the blood, umbilical. Finally, the power to feed. Mother will take her all the way back. That universe of 2. Get it right. Leading the way. In the hospital, I read to you how the prodigal's brother would not accept joy. You squeezed my hand. You're right. I was like that. 2 weeks later, we stood on each side of your bed, watching you breathe. Monitors tracked the slowing rhythm, its breaks. Then, it was as if you were in my mind, your eyes mine. I saw the waiting crowd, outline of the figure at its front. I heard your voice, excited, a child again. Do you want a race? You're going to win, I said. I know. Our brother suddenly telling a story. The day Dad made us follow you down the road, age 3, your tiny legs pumping, eager to lead. Listening to his voice, you ran home. Your joy exploding in my sadness as home ran to meet you. Matt on the soccer field. His right leg flashes out from the melee, swung wide at hip, in gathering the ball, then flirting with it, sending it ahead to catch it with the other foot. It's his now, guarded. This is my son, age 7, glider flying. He is dancing, running ballet. The only sound, muffled thud of leather on leather, shoe on ball. Self in body, thought is act. This is my son, whose bed is safe, whose body is his. When he runs, he is all in it.
The poetry of Wendy Scott. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 WESA.